Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Capitalist Investor. You got me, your boy, Diamond Hands D, back in the saddle after a vacation, feeling good. And you got the whole squad here. We got Tony, Ryan, and Luke. What's up, guys?
How's it going?
I'm jealous, man.
Yeah, you're glowing.
Are you rejuvenated? Are you?
I am not rejuvenated, but it was a lovely vacation.
On vacation with a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, man, yeah. Like
a lot of work.
Is it really a vacation?
I don't know. No.
Well, so we had my wife's whole side of the family, so 5 kids down there total.
Oh.
And they kind of kept themselves entertained.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't like we were, you know, going out to dinner every night or anything like that. Just me and the wife or anything. But it was fun.
What'd you see at the airport? Did you see anything kind of crazy at the airport? Was there a lot of people?
You know, it wasn't too bad. We got there on time. Our flight to Cleveland was delayed coming home by probably like 90 minutes. But other than that, it was fairly smooth.
Now, Luke, you're asking that question like he flies commercial, okay? He has his own private strip, you know, on the private island.
I need to take vacations with Derek then.
Yeah.
If I had money like that, that would be the first thing I would buy is private travel.
Or one of those like
traveling
things,
such a beating. It is the worst.
Yeah.
But we made it down there and back, and yeah, it was good.
Good, man.
All things considered.
We missed you.
Good.
We missed you a lot because crypto collapsed while you were gone, and you were
an expert.
So we're like, what do we say?
You're hanging out with them.
Yes.
Yeah, you were.
Is that collaborating?
No, he was actually bringing suitcases.
Off camera, solid running
move.
Next to him.
Solid move, man.
I saw
a video of Sam Brankman, whatever, fried running down the Bahamas.
I saw that.
And he's not a very good runner.
No,
so,
not too athletic.
Have you seen his frumpy? Like, it's so frumpy.
I think
looking.
It's hair. His hair's holding him back there.
Something's
I think it's
holding
not aerodynamic.
Back.
But anyway, what we got today?
So we'll talk about the good old Santa Claus rally. Should be some good stuff to talk about there. Bob Iger back at Disney. So we can make fun of Jim Cramer a little bit, and then we'll hit on canceled, and the Taylor Swift fiasco I think would be a good one this week, and then maybe some new faces back on Twitter.
Yeah, maybe uncanceled. Know. Uncanceled is becoming just as large of a segment these days as canceled.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of refreshing.
Getting back into the limelight. Yeah, I like it.
Apparently, I don't know. I still believe in him, man. You got to hold on to some sort of hope, you know, every once in a while. But no, I heard that he's holding up and buying his toys and getting all of his inventory through credit card debt. So I don't know if the elves are going to have jobs in Q1 and Q2 of next year.
The elves. Well, all right. So just talking about like savings, I saw a statistic where in 2021, Q2, personal savings was near $2 trillion. It is down to $600 billion. Like, there's been a lot of money spent in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disappearing quickly. And when it disappears, you know, spending is going to slow down and, you know, personal debt is going to ratchet back up. And they're already talking about that. So
you're telling me the trillions of dollars we printed already has been spent?
Poof, gone.
Yep. Sounds about right. You know, we live in an instant gratification world, right? And whenever someone gets some extra money, they spend it. They don't save it.
No. Well, not even getting the money, though. So you made a valid point about the credit card debt. And yes, I don't know if Santa Claus or elves exist. Sorry for spoiling it. However, there is an interesting statistic that came out. Credit card debt jumped 15% in the last year. And that's the highest annual jump in the last 20. So in addition to just money poof disappearing that we printed in the last couple of years, I mean, it's not enough. People are kind of going a little bit into the Discover card or Diners Club, whatever everyone uses.
I mean, so the credit's ratcheting up right now, and you got the Fed trying to destroy. Their last thing they want to destroy is the job market. So you got a bunch of people that don't have a job and have a bunch of debt.
$16.5 trillion in household debt.
How much?
$16.5 trillion.
Solid.
On top of the $31 trillion that the federal government has.
Yeah, catching
so
up.
$48 trillion almost in debt in America. So with that being said, you know, everyone talks about the Santa Claus rally and whether or not it's happened or it's going to happen and what to expect from it. you know, with all these, you know, we got through earnings season kind of untouched. If not, the market rallied 12%, actually. You know, it actually kind of went up after earnings season, it seems like. What are your overall thoughts on the Santa Claus rally, guys?
And I thought before we even jump into the thoughts, let's clarify. So there's different definitions.
Yeah, talk about what it is.
Yeah, so technically speaking, and technical definitions you pointed out to me, Luke, don't really matter anymore because if the administration wants to change it, they just change it. But technically speaking, it's generally the 7 days after Christmas. So the 5 days in December that trade after Christmas and the first couple of days in January. There are people that when they talk Santa Claus rally, they're talking more broadly about maybe like the time period around Christmas or even Q4, people are doing Christmas shopping, and that's when we should see companies realize that sales are good and potentially the stock price to go up. So there's a couple of different things, but I think for the sake of this, we're going to be talking more about the holiday season and those seven particular
trading
days.
So you're telling me Democrats haven't changed the definition of Santa Claus rally yet?
Wait until the data's in, and then they'll see how
we'll see how this works out. Then Q1 of next year, I'll be like, oh, the Santa Claus rally happened because it started in March.
Yeah, I mean, typically the broad market, you know, is up 1 to 1.5%, 75% of the time.
Yep. So I was going to say that's the important part. So why do we talk about the Santa Claus rally? As Tony said, generally it's a pretty good period. And then I would just add a second piece of the equation. So when it is a good period, it tends to extend into the next year and vice versa. When it's not a good period, it's kind of, you know, it's like the stock market Groundhog Day. If we have a good little Santa Claus rally, it could kind of, you know, bode well for the next year. And then on the flip side, if it's not a great Santa Claus rally, you know, expectations might be a little bit lower.
Well, I mean, the rally can typically come from the retail investor versus the institutional investor, where the institutional investors, everyone on Wall Street's on vacation, so they're not really, you know, out there doing. There's usually low volume,
yep,
and you got the more optimistic retail investor trading during that time. But we have low volume right now.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything. I don't know if they're waiting for the Fed to come out and talk in the next couple of days. I don't know, man. But
part of it, too, is the tax loss harvesting aspect of it. Like a lot of people will take their losses in Q4 for the year and then redeploy that capital in January, February. Right. So that's one part of the Santa Claus rally that people talk about. And, you know, where the market's at right now and seeing the year that we've had, I think there's been a lot of tax loss harvesting all the way on the way down. So I don't know if that's going to be as big of a player this Q4 because some people probably took some of their losses in Q2 and Q3 as well when the market has bounced off of the 3,600 level on the S&P three times now, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to be as strong this year as it has in the past.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the tax loss harvesting could have already happened.
Right.
You know, like you make a good point. But it just – everything seems really quiet right now. There's low volume. The VIX is around 20. I was trying to find it. Anyone know the average VIX, like, historically, is it around, like, 30?
No, 30 would be, yeah. 30 would be a sign that it's enhanced volatility, and a sustained period over 30 would be like, hey, there's probably trouble a brewing one way or the other in the near future. So,
but historically, we haven't seen the bottom in the market until the VIX gets above 40. And we've only seen it reach, I think, 33 at the top this year. So, I mean, it's just, this is very interesting, weird times. And my take on the Santa Claus rally, and I'll just throw it out there, is I think it's already happened. I think this 12% rally off the bottom is kind of the Santa Claus rally that everyone kind of expected, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect much more power oomph in this rally over the next year, month and a half. What I will say is I expect this year to be very similar to last year, to where we don't see much up and down maybe heading into the new year over the next month and a half. But once January 1st hits next year, I think there's a lot of people still waiting to get out of the market and sell some of their positions for taxes next year and whatever it be, right? So I think that the first month of January could be where we see another decline or another downturn at least in the market to where we maybe retest the bottom again.
Yeah. No, I think we're like right up against resistance too. So I usually don't drift into this technical analysis because we have the most gifted technicians in the house and it gets really boring really quick. But, you know, I think we're right up against 4,100 and it's not just us, but everyone says this is kind of a crucial, hey, we could break through, you know, and we can go upward or, you know, we might retest the lows if we can't get through 4,100. Yeah. So it's an interesting like you said, interesting
very pivotal
time.
Point. Like, yeah. like I said, it just seems like we're floating. Mm-hmm. We're not going up and we're not going down. And but we did see a great rally in the last, what, two, three.
You want to see volume, though, with rallies. There was no volume with the rallies.
Mm-hmm. I'm still – so I know that we talked a little bit about it last week without D, but with Derek. But, man, like this crypto thing, like – I'm worried about the contagion drifting into like the real stock market. Like I know there's billions of dollars out there, and you know, that's why we've always said from day one, only own as much crypto as you can lose without losing sleep. Like, but there's some people that are highly invested and now where do they go on their credit crunch? Cause their money's just gone.
Right.
Bankruptcy.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's bananas. Like, how much is it going to bleed into, like, the bond market now?
You know, and so there's other – I would just add that everyone's starting to talk about, like, it costs money to mine crypto. I mean, you got to, like, run a computer and you got to pay bills. And a lot of people don't think about it because we don't even understand the 101 level of crypto. Mm-hmm. But, like, Bitcoin's at an inflection point where all of a sudden, like, to mine one Bitcoin, it costs about that much – you know, money. So it's like at some point, the people that are way behind the scenes, they're going to look at their bottom line and be like, why am I paying $18,000 to get something that's $16,000? So maybe I should just go, I don't know, play League of Legends. What do they do when you don't mind?
That's what Sam does.
World of Warcraft.
Sam Bankman Fried does. Hey, don't be hating on World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I won't.
Used to be my game
sorry.
Back in the day.
Oh, sorry, bro.
Until he got into the crypto.
I mean, but like you make a good point. I've read that too, is that we're at that inflection point where it costs as much to mine it that it's worth. Then, but doesn't I don't know how this exactly works. So maybe someone in this room does. But so if people stop mining it, does it become cheaper because there's just less people trying to uncode them? I don't know. Or is it – it doesn't matter. They're just so complex now.
That's actually a fair point, and you are right on that. Because if there's less people mining it, that means you have more of a likelihood of mining a Bitcoin compared to somebody else.
Right.
So when everyone's competing – so some – just a little bit of backstory real quick. Some cryptos, you get partials. You get like – if you are mining, you get like rewarded maybe 0.01 of whatever crypto you're mining. Bitcoin, you'll either get all of it or nothing.
Really?
You don't get fractions. Hmm. So when there's a lot of people mining, the likelihood of you getting a full Bitcoin is very, very low.
Right. Is it like a race to get to the 100% pool?
Yeah. Whoever's the first one to crack the encryption code will get that full Bitcoin. Yeah. No matter how much effort one miner has put into trying to crack the code.
Yeah.
But it's a static difficulty though, right? Static difficulty on the algorithm to verify the block of Bitcoin, correct?
You just said a lot of big words.
Okay. Sorry. Maybe we've gone too far. Let's just walk it back to 101. But I thought that was inherent, is that the difficulty of the Bitcoin algorithm doesn't change, and that you have to burn more computer and process more. I don't do
well. It's the cost. It's the cost too of the inputs, like the actual processors. Like if you're using Intel or AMD chips to mine, like these things are expensive now. So as the price of Bitcoin comes down, anyone that's entering the market to buy new miners, buy new hardware to mine that's more expensive too. So the ROI is definitely a lot less, and that's something you have to take into account. And that might be impacting the whole crypto market as a whole.
Yeah, I'm just worried about they're talking about like Coinbase, their bonds are trading at 50%.
Well, you know,
Greystone's about they won't show their ledger.
The harbinger of death just scooped up a ton of Coinbase. So,
did she?
Yeah, she
no, bought. NGPTC in the Grayscale. She like put like another like $20 million or something into Grayscale.
And I apologize. I don't really think she's the harbinger. She hasn't been hot this year at all, though. And so,
that is like a leap of faith, man. You can.
Yeah.
This is going to be make or break it moment for her. Like, she's either going to become completely irrelevant or she's going to become. Like she was last year. But I would put my money on that she's going to become more irrelevant than anything.
Yep.
It's interesting. You know, so her whole premise is that she's going to invest in the future and she's a daily trader. You know, it's like what changed about the future in the last day that you would scoop in and change your position? I mean, she sold liquidated positions overnight. She listens to earnings calls and gets rid of some. She's like a future investor. If you're making an investment for 5 to 10 years in the future, there should be relatively little that's going to change your mind. So, I don't know why she moves the chips so much.
And if anything, if you liked it 3 months ago and it's down 80%, don't you dollar cost average into that bottom,
right,
yeah. and get it at a low, or the average lower price.
But I think this applies to what we're talking about with the Santa Claus rally, because we talked about the contagion effect of, you know, FTX and Coinbase and all these, you know, Genesis, all these cryptos kind of blowing up. You know, I do think there is going to be some trickle into the markets, like overall markets, because I don't think this is an issue with crypto. The cryptos, like I said last week, this isn't an issue with crypto. This is an issue with, you know, companies getting over leveraged and taking on more debt maybe than they're, you know, able to or than they should, right? It's not just the crypto industry that did this. I think there's $6 trillion that was printed over the past like 5 or 10 years in the technology sector. Crypto is part of technology. So this is going to impact, I think, a lot of other high growth tech companies as we head into this end of this year and into Q1. So it's going to, I think, hinder the Santa Claus rally, especially as it creates more fear.
Yeah. And I mean, that average crypto investor is probably highly levered in, you know, long duration stocks, you know, those mm-hmm. highly speculative. And when they start pulling their money because their crypto wallet blew up, yeah. like that's where I see the contagion happening and bleeding into like the real traded stocks.
I mean, let's not forget, 6 months ago, people were on, you know, CNBC and Fox Business saying, you know, crypto was an inflation hedge.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like, so it's pretty clear that the technology behind crypto has application and is super interesting. But it was also pretty apparent that we don't need 97 different coins,
yeah.
right? And that this was eventually going to happen, mm-hmm. and it's happening right now. You don't need, you know, Dogecoin and all the other ones. You really only need a couple for it to be successful.
I mean, I just love it. Like, I go to the convenience store around the corner, and they got a Bitcoin machine in there, and I'm yep. like, get out of here. Like, what's the fee like on that thing? It's got to be like 20% of what
who would buy Bitcoin from a gas station. Like, can you just imagine? Hey, I'm going to spend $20,000 to buy, or $18,000 to buy Bitcoin.
You buy $20 worth of Bitcoin. Stop and buy some lottery tickets too.
Jeez.
All right. Anyway.
All right. Let's move on to Bob Iger back at Disney. I think that was announced yesterday, Monday,
yeah.
and the stock popped. It was up about 9%, and I think it closed down up about 5%. On the news, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you know, basically the old CEO, Bob Chapek, is that?
Chapek.
Yeah. Basically tried to turn Disney into an ultra woke company.
Yeah.
And it seemed to backfire pretty significantly.
Iger's even more woke. You know, Chapek was the moderate, even though you're absolutely right. He mm-hmm. turned it into, it was ultra woke. Iger's people were like, you're not being woke enough, because they got into a showdown with DeSantis, and Chapek yeah. tried to walk the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Disney lost that showdown too,
they
by
did.
The way.
They definitely
but Iger wanted a more aggressive stance, and a lot of his people were still behind on the board and in management positions, and they felt betrayed, but that Chapek would be so diplomatic and political with that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually cost them the tax credit that they get, right? I mean, didn't they have some sort of tax abatement where they pretty much – they were like their own country.
Yeah.
And, yep.
Yeah. So,
So their own country, the loss of tax credit, like is Disney's power move to move out of Florida?
Way too expensive.
I know. I mean, I heard it's like a miniature city underneath
Disney. Where that's an all-year sunny place would Disney move? I mean, like, so they're already in California. You're going to move to Texas. You got right. the same problems there.
Right.
You're going to move somewhere else in the Sun Belt, like the South.
Alabama. Mississippi.
Yeah, there's really nowhere
Biloxi,
to go. There's nowhere
Biloxi, to go. Gulf Shores, Alabama.
I mean, they can blow up Disneyland, right. but in California.
It's also not only about Disney either, because when I was down in Orlando about a month ago or three weeks ago, one of the Uber drivers actually made a good point that a lot of the land that Disney owns, mm-hmm. like there's a lot of other businesses on that land too, that like they have a really good partnership agreement in there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the hotels, a lot of the restaurants, like they have really good lease agreements with Disney down there. And if they got rid of that, they wouldn't have the same yeah. lease agreement somewhere else. It would take years to do that. So financially, it would make absolutely zero sense. What they're going to probably try to do is – you know, walk the fine line, or they're going to try to negotiate some sort of deal with.
They're going to walk DeSantis back everything.
Yeah,
you know, that's mm-hmm. it's political at this point. They're like, all right, let's bring in the guys got us here. The last
and maybe that's
20
what Bob
years.
Iger. You know, that's maybe he's going to be there and save the day like he's always saved the day. Can you, you know, that Bob Chapek, though, I mean, talk about a bad time to start a gig. So everyone loved Iger. He was at the top of the world because the Marvel franchise was doing a trillion a movie or whatever. And so Bob Chapek starts in mid-February of 2020. It's like, oh, okay, cool. He was the Parks and Rec guy. Like, he ran, you know, Disney World and Disneyland and stuff. And so, like, 2 days into his tenure, America's like, oh, hey, we're going to lock everything down forever.
Right.
You know, it's a great start. And then, obviously, within months, there's that legislation that – you know, takes him away from the role, and now he's more of a politician, and he's trying to appease kind of the ultra woke that work for him and try not to piss off DeSantis. So
I was actually at Disney World the week before lockdown started.
What did that's and, a good time.
Yeah. And it was actually pretty nice because I think that was starting to get out, the COVID story. And I would say it was probably only 75% of what it usually is. Well, and my kids were still too young to really enjoy it, but it was
COVID or Disney World?
Yeah, COVID.
Okay.
No, we've been enjoying that for a long time though.
Well, how about that for a challenge too? So, like, he, you know, a lot of the country still wanted to be locked down. He's running a huge resort, and half the people want to go and enjoy everything, and the other half are like, you know, 6 feet between each other and wear masks. And I mean, what a challenge for that guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is this one of the things that Kramer? Yeah. From CNBC got right.
I didn't understand what he was doing. I saw on Sunday night, he was texting ambiguously about Disney.
I mean, I know if, like, when they came out with their earnings, he's like, he's got to go, you know, like, so this is maybe one out of the eight things that he gets wrong. Like, he finally got something right.
I think he actually tried to run for president, that Iger, so that didn't materialize. Mm. You know, he kind of stepped away in 2019 with the hopes of running for the Democratic Party, but I don't think there was a spot for a old white billionaire man, you know, and they kind of said, hey, you know, no to you, no to Howard Schultz, the Starbucks guy. But Bloomberg was like, I'm going to do it anyways. And then that lasted for 1 week.
Did not work out too well. Yeah. But hey, actually, if anyone has Disney Plus, the documentaries on how Disney World got started, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And then there's actually also, I think it's called Imagination, something like that. It's a documentary on the Imagineers that kind of created Disney. So it's both of those very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like many, many years ago, I meant like they had documents. Love it, man. Mm-hmm. Like, took swampland, gutted it, built all this fantastic stuff on top of it. I mean, I think Walt Disney spent literally like $3 to buy hundreds of acres of land that no one wanted.
Yep, and they would buy it under LLCs with like fake names, so no one knew that they were doing it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Yeah.
Until the word finally got out. So like the last plot of land that he got, he had to pay up for because
people were like, hey, what's that 190-foot golf ball doing in the middle of nowhere? You know? Right.
So if we are entering a world where, you know, maybe we get a deep recession next year, you know, credit card debt's holding up the economy, is Disney going to stay woke? Or are they going to have to change their...
I think they double down.
Are they going to have to change
Iger is an absolute
mindset.
Double down on, not only are we staying woke, we might pursue an even more radical agenda. That's my take. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this guy, he was way to the left of Chapek, like I said. So
are they going to shoot themselves in the foot, though?
But maybe it'll get... It's an interesting question because maybe it'll get tucked into an over... But I think there's like an anti-ESG sentiment bubbling now. And so just like ESG took off a couple of years ago, maybe it gets wrapped up into that. And now, you know, we're starting to think about profit and running a business and with the intent of producing value for the shareholders and not for Indonesian flood victims
or
whatever.
The woke is so new. Like, I just feel like, I feel like it came in hot and heavy. It came out of nowhere, really. And now it's, you know, like, I think it'll fizzle.
Yeah.
Like, I think people are just going to get tired of it.
I think COVID kind of helped the woke crowd because no one else had anything to do.
No one else had to do so.
Angry, and they're going to have social media and find issues, you know, whatever in the world. And I think as we get back, you know, recovering from, you know, the new normal or COVID, I think people will start to realize this woke stuff is annoying. And and maybe people will choose to cancel their Disney Plus. Maybe people will choose to not go to Disney World. And especially if we're entering a downturn or where uncertainty exists and recession exists, they might have to really rethink their strategy because if they're completely you know, doing away with half of the country for their earnings.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter's three. I know that we have plans on taking her when she's five or six. And if it continues to, if they were going to ramp up the wokeness, like, guess who's not going to Disney World?
Right.
Yeah. Like, as much as I don't want to do that, but like, I want to go down there.
When we were younger, I mean, there were five things to do as a child. You could go outside and throw a ball around. You could ride in that little red and yellow car with your, you know, you pedal, and then you could watch like Disney movies. There's too much content now to like be super. I mean, you have to be catering to the woke crowd because you will cancel your Disney Plus. You won't go to Disney. There's so much other. I mean, you could be a Netflix person, although they're super woke too, but. I mean, like, there's other content out there to consume. You're not beholden to Disney.
I just feel like he can't. They rehired, you know, the old CEO to like walk back everything that's been brought to the woke center. I guess that was my take too.
I thought kind of what you said. Return to, hey, let's try to be profitable and return shareholder value.
Yeah, somebody go shake DeSantis' hand to get our tax break back, please. Yeah.
I saw Iger speak at the Charles Schwab conference, and I thought he did a very good job speaking. I may not agree with what he stands for, what he does, but I think he was a good speaker, and I think he has potential. As long as he executes it properly, I think he has potential to turn Disney around if he does what we're talking about.
Yeah. He's got a history of it. So when he took over in the mid-2000s, I mean, it was a $25 stock, and he worked it up to north of 100 prior to COVID. And it's never recovered from COVID. I mean, it's had a rough run for the last 2 years. So
also, we'll see what, you know, Luke, do you want to take a side? Because Derek and Iger's going to walk it all back, and Ryan thinks he's doubling down and lacing up his bootstraps.
This is, again, where I always struggle because – what I think is going to happen is always different than what I want to happen.
All right.
And I think what I think is going to happen is Bob Iger is going to keep doing what he probably always did, because it's hard to walk back to something. So most likely, I think he will continue down this path of wokeism, but I think it's going to hurt Disney in the long term.
All right.
What I want to happen is the opposite.
Does that mean we're winning?
So I think he's going to try, but having been to Disney World between now and COVID, you know, it's – I'm not sure how much woke they can walk back.
Yeah. I mean, they don't even say welcome boys and girls anymore. Mm-hmm. They say welcome dreamers of all ages because they don't want to gender anyone the wrong way. I mean, that's what they say when you walk into the park.
I probably wouldn't even notice that, though.
Someone noticed. But so it's institutionalized is all I'm trying to say. Yeah. I mean, at every level. So I kind of, you know, I tend to agree. I mean, it's hard to walk back all that stuff. So I'm probably a little cynical saying double down, but
just keep it the same.
I think it might be ingrained.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Luke, did you pick a side?
I did.
Because I want to bet Oppo.
No, I did. I'm more with Ryan.
Okay.
I'm more with Ryan that I think they're probably going to double down.
All right. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Canceled. All right, you guys talk about Taylor Swift.
Well, I guess it's really Ticketmaster.
This is Ryan's girl. This is Ryan's favorite band.
You know, I'm a Kanye guy, and we've got the beef, so I'm still not on the Tay Tay bandwagon. But
Tay Tay,
I'm gonna let you finish.
All right,
go.
No, that's the Kanye. He's quoting Kanye right there.
I was so confused. That was over my head. I was like, "What?"
It happened when you were nine.
Yeah, you were probably 7 years old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well. The good old days.
Yeah,
I had no worries.
He stormed the stage when Taylor Swift was getting an award and took the mic out of her hand.
Really?
Basically.
Yeah. You didn't. So this is why, you know, Kanye's been canceled 50 times.
Yeah, at least.
You know, said slavery is a choice.
But Taylor's not canceled because she's woke, right?
No. I think her sponsors embrace that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. They embrace.
Not Ticketmaster though, because now she's got ticket. And this is the seg. Ticketmaster's been canceled again.
Yeah.
If you're young, Ticketmaster's been canceled 50 times. Yeah. Pearl Jam, Rage Against. Yeah, the, you know,
it's a scam. It's a scam. You know? Like they take. You know, I got 100,000 tickets. I'm going to block off 50,000 and give them to brokers so I get a kickback. Like, I mean, it is just
what do you mean scam? You mean charging a 48% ticket fee on the ticket prices?
Yeah. Well, then they get probably a kickback from the broker they sold
the
it
second,
to
and then a third sale.
Yeah, your $50 ticket turns into $200.
But then they get another fee on all the resale. And that's what's really, I mean, the prices, you can probably go look now. They're insane.
4X.
Like $50,000 a seat. Ridiculous.
Well, let me just stick up for Ticketmaster here since we're trying to cancel them. The name of the show that we're on right now is The Capitalist Investor. What's wrong with that?
So I agree with you. I don't think So I think sports cards and autographs is probably the greasiest industry out there. Ticket broker is probably right behind there. It has been a scam since for my whole life. You know, from me walking up to Bills games when I'm eight, you know, trying to get in. It's just a greasy industry. And yeah, they take advantage of the hype, right? Taylor Swift hasn't toured in what, 4 years, something like that.
How does Ticketmaster still exist? Why isn't Taylor, so help me understand, like, why do they have Ticketmaster? Can't Taylor Swift so big, like, can't she just rent out her own stadium and
people
and
were
go
that's a great question. I mean, people were doing that. Louis C.K. was doing that when he had a huge comedy tour. He said, cut him out. He was like one of the only people. Pearl Jam did it, you know, for a short while.
Was it the kickbacks that they get or something?
Yeah. I don't know. That's what I would say. I don't know exactly the logistics, but I'd say they get some sort of big kickback. Because, you know, if you go outside of somebody, you know, they don't own the stadiums. It's a whole mess to try to logistically plan a lot of this stuff. So it's easier to go to somebody like Ticketmaster and then probably get some sort of kickback from the sales, right? Or you get at least maybe paid right up front for going through Ticketmaster. Who knows, right? I don't know exactly logistics, but I just can imagine it would be very complicated for them to go off and do this on their own. That's why they choose not to do it. But my problem is, and I don't even think we really got into the, you know, exactly what happened. But what happened was, you know, Taylor Swift went on Ticketmaster and they sold their tickets and there's a big mess. And now, you know, tickets are $35,000. Like that was the issue, right? So my problem is these celebrities are so hypocritical because
there was an outage too, I think, right? Like it went down because
there was so much traffic. So people trying to get into the public sale basically couldn't get in. And it was delay after delay. People were online all day and didn't get tickets.
Only ones that got tickets are the
fans that were supposed to get the tickets.
And only the flippers got them. Yeah, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my problem is Taylor Swift's out there complaining about this, how it's a whole mess and that she wishes her fans could get tickets cheaply, more affordable. But at the end of the day, if she cares so much about her fans, then why doesn't she have a free show?
Yeah, like, do a show in Central Park.
Yeah, go do a free show. Book something yourself. Maybe, you know, charge people for alcohol, whatever it be, to admit the show, and she can make money that way. But she probably wants to make the millions and millions and millions of dollars that she wants to make.
Yeah,
she acts like she cares about her fans, but she really doesn't.
She does not care.
I haven't seen such a scathing criticism of Taylor since Kanye.
And I used to like Taylor Swift, honestly. I thought she was a good role model for young girls, and yeah, I've had enough of her.
Is it the venues? Is it the venues that have that locked down? They're like, hey, you can only rent out our stadium if you go through Ticketmaster. Like, how ingrained is it that, like, these celebrities like Taylor can't do their own show it's just locked down?
We're in Cleveland. You know, Gilbert tried to lock down Rocket Mortgage or it was Quicken Loans.
I was gonna
he had, like,
up.
Flash seats and stuff. So I know there's been alternatives presented. I don't know if he would have been a Taylor Swift person. But
they don't have that anymore, though. Flash seats are gone?
Yeah.
That was like a 20 arena, though. So there was like some minor league teams or basketball teams. It was regional. But I think they tried to cut in a Ticketmaster share, and it just Ticketmaster's always the last one standing.
Right.
So it's amazing. So I think that's the answer, Tony. Yeah. I think they're the last ones that have it figured out. Because the Cavs now, I believe it's Flash.
Flash was what it was.
SeatGeek.
Right.
Okay.
So
official partner,
and it's, you know, buy and sell. So yeah, if you want to buy, you know, a $200 ticket on the secondary market, you can, but it's going to cost you an extra $68 or something ridiculous.
So I think the issue isn't even necessarily Ticketmaster. It's who owns Ticketmaster. It's Live Nation, right? They own Ticketmaster, and Live Nation is the one who does all the logistics for all this stuff. So it's probably Live Nation that has all these deals and all these, you know, lease agreements, whatever it be, for all these stadiums, you know, for events.
Well, I think they run the concerts too. You know, live. So now we're talking monopoly, and I guess the right answer for the capitalist investor show is, like, you know, capitalism's good, but we don't want too much power concentrated.
I think I saw somewhere like some of the Dems came out and said, this is a monopoly. We need to break up Ticketmaster.
Sherrod Brown probably was out there the next day. I couldn't even get tickets for my daughter.
You know, what is.
All right. Well, what about so now, like, we were talking, like, some of the things are starting to become uncanceled, like Donald Trump on Twitter. But he politely declined. He's like,
Elon was like trying to tempt him all weekend. I don't know if you saw those memes, but like some of them were a little not safe for work. Yeah.
Not safe for work. Yeah. I saw the one. I'm like, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, he's already up to like 100 million followers already on Twitter.
And you know, the news piece of it was that he ran a poll. You know, like, yeah. And that poll got how many? I didn't even check.
15 million people voted.
So
he said 148 million people saw that poll.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've been talking about polls in the recent past and elections and stuff, and they're not as efficient. So maybe you could teach a thing or two to Arizona still counting.
Yeah.
You know, they botched
Here's what's
going
to happen.
Phoenix.
Trump's going to not do as well as he thinks he's going to do. And he's going to use Twitter to try to sway the vote or sway people's opinions of him. So give it a couple months, I think. And then once he sees his campaign is not going the way he thinks it's going to go, then he'll probably get back on Twitter.
But isn't DWAC that blank check company, isn't that the Donald World?
Digital World Digital Acquisition World. Group. Yeah.
Is he locked in with the Truth Social thing? You can't, when you're trying to pitch that, you can't go tweeting. You can't go using the competitor service saying, hey, this is a better.
He says, I'm going to stick to my platform, but I mean, I don't know anyone.
He's probably
going
to try to drive people to his platform. Why wouldn't he use his 100 million followers on Twitter to do something to drive people to DWAC?
Who runs that? Devin Nunes? Is that the guy that?
I don't know.
Like I said, he might have a non-compete. He can't break the non-compete, right?
Maybe. Yep.
Probably a year or two. So.
Yeah. All right. Canceled and non-canceled. All right. Well, that's it, man. It's Thanksgiving. Enjoy.
Thankful for you guys.
What are you guys' favorite food for Thanksgiving, by the way?
Turkey.
Yeah, I'd say stuffing is my favorite.
I second that. There's no doubt that stuffing is
with
the best
sausage. It has to have
turkey
sausage.
Or best Thanksgiving meal.
I just dump so much corn on top of my mashed potatoes and mix it in with gravy, and then you, on the end of the fork, you put the turkey. That's it, man, right there. If some stuffing gets in the way, it's just, I'll take it.
When I come back 30 pounds heavier next week, don't judge me.
Sleeping at the desk from all the tryptophan.
Yeah. I was gonna smoke a turkey this year, but I'm doing a big smoke tomorrow, actually, on Wednesday. So I got some beef ribs, spare ribs, and then a couple tomahawk steaks at the end.
Man, Thanksgiving before Thanksgiving.
So I got that on Wednesday, then Thanksgiving at my in-laws on Thursday, and then I'm deep frying a turkey, and we're having Thanksgiving again with my family.
I want a deep fried turkey. My brothers did it for years, and
I heard it's
the only way to
go,
man.
You got
to
eat the skin is so good.
It takes like 45 minutes.
And
like,
where's my invite for Wednesday? You didn't. I don't.
Come on over.
Bring leftovers. What about Ohio State, Michigan? Can we get some picks on the record? Yeah, and then also I think Tom Brady coming to Cleveland for maybe the last time on Sunday. Yeah, so it's like
some
minor
sports
league
stuff
going
on. I don't. What is the line for the Ohio State game?
I have no idea.
Got to be like Ohio State minus 9-ish.
It's in Columbus. Is it 9?
Last time I checked.
Well, you get the 3 from home, and then they're probably a touchdown better than Michigan.
So I'm going to go to the, everyone in the office had an opportunity to go to this game. Yeah. So there was one ticket floating around, but I'm the one that's taken it. So
I'm living by
I will be down
Ohio
there.
Ohio State minus 7.5.
7.5 now. Okay. Yeah. So if you see me on the Jumbotron down there, don't judge me.
As long as Ohio State wins, no judgment. But I'm going to make sure. Let's guarantee the win here, right?
That's right.
Okay.
All right. The total's 57. I'm going over on that. It is going to be up and down the field, I think.
What kind of weather are you looking at?
40s? 45 degrees.
Okay.
Not looking forward to that.
Doesn't matter. You know.
Is it in Columbus?
Yes.
Yeah. I probably have to take Ohio State. They'll probably get down -7 around game time. So I'd take Ohio State.
I'm going to say they're going to be tied and it's going to go to OT.
Okay.
Ooh.
Okay.
Bold prediction. I think it's going to be a track meet. I think, you know.
No one seems too interested in playing defense.
No.
Michigan played a little bit last week. I mean, they almost lost to Illinois.
I mean, Ohio State can dial up their defense. It's sketchy, but it's like, it's better than the Browns defense.
Right.
a lot of things are better than the Browns defense, but that's another story.
And the Browns are going to get clapped by them fucking ears this Sunday, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, everyone have a great Thanksgiving. Looking forward to being back next week and knocking out another Capitalist Investor.
Yeah. All right. Take care. Happy Thanksgiving, all.
Yep.
The opinions expressed in the podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any investment, legal, financial, or tax strategy. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. Please consult a qualified professional about your individual needs.